Hello, everyone. Welcome to KPFK's Geek Radio. For the next hour, we are going to be bringing you the latest news and discussion from the geek world. We are going to be talking about Tomb Raider, the film that just came out this weekend. We're going to be talking a little bit about Jessica Jones Season 2 on Netflix. In addition to that, we're going to be reviewing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the latest episode, and also stick around for some Tron.
Yes, Tron.
No, some Infinity War talk. It's going to be some Infinity War talk. There's a new trailer out, and we are going to be breaking it down. My name is Chris.
I'm Lauren.
Ron.
And Patrick.
All right, so let's get right into it. Who has seen Tomb Raider? I know I've seen it.
I've seen it.
You've seen it? You're
I haven't.
Odd woman out.
We're spoiling Lauren today.
So we might spoil. It is a movie that has already come out many years ago. So, you know, spoilers are 15 years
spoilers
old.
Spoilers are abound.
Yeah, they're out. So basically, this is a reboot of a film that came out in 2001, I believe, and Angelina Jolie was the main actress in it before, and she's been replaced by Alicia
Vikander. If Alicia or anybody from the film is listening, or anybody worked on the film is listening, we're sorry if we butcher her name.
No, you got it right.
Vikander?
Mm-hmm. Vikander.
Okay.
Big fan right here. So
Vikander.
I know.
Sweet. Awesome. That's what
we got a follower right here.
Alicia Vikander. She plays Lara Croft. Basically, the story is like Indiana Jones meets Rogue One. Like, that's my opinion. Like, it's those two things together.
I think I actually pretty much agree with that assessment right there, because it was definitely Indiana Jones. You could feel it in there. Yeah. It was a venture into, like, some unknown region, taking big risks into an unknown island and just discovering what's there, what evils lurk on this island.
Yeah, exactly. So let's just do initial kind of reactions to this film. Were we disappointed? Did it meet our expectations? Did it exceed our expectations? I'm going to start with you, Ron.
I felt it was actually a good story. Now, keep in mind, this is a personal disclaimer for me that I have, honestly, I haven't seen the original films with...
I haven't either.
With
Angelina
Jolie, yeah. Which just went blank on her name.
Maleficent.
Because I felt that's another show talking about Tron.
Yes.
I haven't seen it only because I've really just been weary of film adaptations of video games. Mm. But you know what? Taking on the
And this is one, for anyone that doesn't know, this was a video game first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it was like a reboot of a film, but I don't really think of it that way. I think of it more of an origin story. Well, no, of a new adaptation of the game.
Yeah.
You know? I don't really think of it as like, we're going to try to remake this film. It's like they had their chance at it, and now we're... So I still think of it more associated with the game than
it's like how A Wrinkle in Time is not a reboot of the previous Canadian A Wrinkle in Time movie. It's just another adaptation.
I didn't know there was a Canadian one.
Yes, there was.
All right, we should have talked about that last week.
Wrinkle in Time and Tron. We're just going to bring that the whole time. No, it was interesting. It was interesting to see this character. It almost seemed like an origin, like a reboot of an origin story for Lara Croft.
Yeah.
And I felt that this was I'm only comparing this film to possibly the trailers of the original Tomb Raider series with Angelina Jolie, that this one felt a little bit more realistic. It felt like it was going on an adventure. It did feel like there was more backstory to it and a little bit more exploration. Now, I do have some qualms about the film as well, too, in certain scenes. And I kind of also laughed at the music score. And it's interesting that I laughed at the music score because during the film, when there was always these intense scenes, the music honestly just picks up. It's like electronic music when you're just waiting for the beat to drop. You know, it gets that tense and then you just, boom, there goes the score where all of a sudden some dramatic scene happens during the movie and Lara Croft is facing danger. All of a sudden, or something is about to happen, and you're waiting for something to happen, but it ends up being like a little bit of a comical scene in a way. But it's kind of like a trope, I guess.
Yeah.
On
it can be a very cliche movie at times. Like,
yeah.
I definitely felt that. Patrick, what about you?
Well, I have seen the originals.
Okay.
I've played the video games. I think I even read the comic books to a certain extent.
Wow. So you are like a big Tomb Raider fan.
Well, I worked at GameStop for a long time, so
okay.
I was just like.
Okay.
In that culture of game of just all, like, and that was when Tomb Raider was
so
added
so
to
so at GameStop you paid someone like 50 cents to turn in their whole collection of Tomb Raider things.
Why would I give them 50 whole cents when I can get it for a quarter?
One quarter portion.
That's pretty much that was me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the first two when they came out. I haven't seen them in a long time, so I don't know if they've held up. And I saw some reviews for this film weren't that great even before I went into it. But
50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really? But to be honest, I had a good time. I knew what I was going in to see. I was going to go see an adaptation of a video game. So maybe my expectations being where they were walking in, I had a good time. The music didn't bother me. I actually kind of dug it, like the way they worked it in. And it was what I thought it was going to be. To me, nothing will ever touch Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
They got it right. And to be clear, I'm not saying like, oh, because it had a female lead. That has nothing to do with it. Mm. It just – Indiana Jones was what it was at the right time in my life. Like I was a little kid watching it and it just blew me away. But I like those types of films. Like that kind of adventure, couldn't wait. And I loved it. I had a great time watching it. It for me, it delivered on everything I had hoped I would get from it. I wasn't expecting an Academy Award winning film. You know what I mean? But – it was great. I love her. I love the premise. Love the games. So the film was just right. They had some. I loved the pawn shop scenes.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Those were good.
And so you know, and I loved where it left off. Whether that leads into another one or not, I just loved where they took the story. They really it was a true origin story, in that you didn't even really get to the character you know from the games until the end.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have to ask this question though. Mm-hmm. Was there any reference to her being a? This is going to spoil it again. A poor courier.
Back in the games?
That's
got to
be a new thing because she's doing
she's
doing like Postmates, which is like a modern job that people didn't do.
Yeah,
in
2001. I mean, it was definitely updated for the times.
Yeah,
but I feel like there was always, because even in the original films, there was, you know, her father had disappeared and he left her some kind of message. I don't remember very well, but I do remember. I think her Angelina's Dilly's father played her father in the first one, if I remember correctly. So. So that thread has always been there, that he was the adventurer and that's how she kind of got pulled into the life. And I feel like that was in at least one of the games. I don't really remember.
See, it was hard for me to see that transition from her becoming a courier to an all of a sudden an all out badass adventurer.
I felt like they at least showed that her father was training her in certain things. Like you saw him teaching her archery, so it wasn't a huge jump to think that he probably taught her to do a lot of stuff like that. It would have been different if she was like at like, you know, boarding school the whole time. And
I thought it was set up really well because they also had like the boxing scenes as well.
Right.
And that actually played kind of into her character development because, you know, she couldn't figure out how to beat the other woman when she was boxing. And then towards the end of the film, she's like doing martial arts and she is successful and uses some of the same moves that were like used on her, know, in that scene. So I thought that was everything in the film like tied in really well. Like I felt like that they set up everything so that everything that she was able to do made sense. However, I will say that this being a PG-13 film, the fact that it's PG-13 actually made it a little bit unrealistic because the stuff that she was going through in this film, this would make someone look a little bit more disheveled.
She would have honestly, she probably would have died earlier in the movie if this was a more realistic film because, you know, we'll talk about I don't know if I can talk about it. There was that whole scene where she was taking, you know, a ship with Lou. This other character named Lu Ren, and they just his boat looks wrecking cheap, like broken, crashing into the rocks near the island that they were going to, and she has to jump off the boat, and she's, you know, in rough, really really rough waters, and she's being banged up left and right. Yet there's hardly any scars on her, no bloody contusions or anything.
Her, and that's like that for throughout like, many scenes where things are happening where you would expect her to be a lot more beat up than she is.
Crashing into trees from a broken parachute. I mean,
it's got that Indiana Jones.
Well, she probably died in the water and respawned. This is a video game, guys.
Right.
It's a video game. Right. She has extra lives or some type of.
I mean, if Indiana Jones can survive, you know, jumping out of like a plane in like a dinghy, like.
And that's what I was thinking. It's like it wasn't super realistic, but how much realism do we go in for in an adaptation of a video game? Like, I want to see crazy stuff like that in this type of film and just enjoy the ride. And I was just going to say the same thing. Indiana Jones, like upon watching as an adult, he got away with a lot too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this film. I don't know anything about this franchise at all, so I just went in. This was my introduction to the franchise.
Mm, same
and,
with me.
Yeah. You know, aside from just thinking, oh, this is like Indiana Jones, but with like the plot of Rogue One, you know, like, you know, that I was like, this is actually a pretty fun movie to watch. It's really cool. I thought that it was paced really well. There weren't any parts that were like boring to me. Like I said, I thought they set up her character very well, and everything that they did at the beginning of the film tied into the end of the film, so it made sense. They weren't wasting time on anything. And
the only thing that got me, and then it resolved itself, is at first when they showed her as a really young girl and her father was leaving, and they kept saying he had been gone for, what was it, 7 years?
Yeah, I was
and I kept
little...
doing the math. I'm like, is she supposed to be, what, like 16?
I had trouble with that, too.
Yeah, when they showed her again, I was like, okay, that's just one of his many trips. Then I was okay. But it was bugging me for like a good 30 minutes. I was just going, well, how old are they trying to make her out to be? She can't be playing like, you know, high school student here. But but then it worked.
Yeah, no. That was a little weird. I agree. But they did fix it after you saw the other scene. So I'll give them credit for fixing that little problem. Mm-hmm. And also kind of the thing that I liked about the film, like obviously we're talking about Indiana Jones, and the most recent modern adaptation of Indiana Jones is Crystal Skull, which has some kind of mixed reviews from fans and stuff. And one of the things that I think people were kind of like so about is how like that film did get like so like supernatural with all like the aliens and the stuff. And I thought that it was, and again, watch the film, go and watch it right now if you don't want to know kind of the twist at the end, because I'm going to kind of roughly talk about it right now, is kind of basically what you learn at the end of the film is that what everybody thought has been supernatural has a natural explanation at the end of the film. And I thought that was kind of cool that they did that, because it grounded it in reality. A film that's very unrealistic is actually something that could technically feasibly happen in our universe, even though it's a video game and it's like a fantasy adventure film.
Yeah.
It's still something that they brought back into like science and stuff. And I thought that was kind of cool. Like, I thought that was a good twist.
Yeah, I agreed.
What about the villain? Let's talk about the villain. Mm-hmm. What was his name? I forgot his name. It started with a V. I know he mentioned Matthias
Vogel. Yeah.
I felt that he was pretty vicious from the get go. I think he was very intimidating at the first introduction.
Yeah.
Between him, that interaction about Vogel and Laura in the tent, when Laura just, you know, was just captured and when she woke up and was revived, it's like, I am this guy, I am taking control of this whole entire camp. And he's very adamant about what he wants as well, too. So I felt that he played a very decent villain, probably not the most amazing villain, but he was no frills, a straightforward, let me get this. I'm glad that you guys have come here, because now I can obtain my goal. And it seems very cliche to have that as well too. But it does set up the original idea that this person has the information. Again, we're having to go in that Indiana Jones direction where somebody information.
You know what film it reminded me of?
Last Crusade.
That scene when she wakes up in his tent and he's like, "I'm glad you're here," because he's finally going to get in. It was very much like Tron Legacy when Sam meets Gru for the first time, and he says, "I'm not your father, Sam, but I'm so glad you're here." It was very, very similar.
So in our comparisons between Tron and...
I also got a Batman vibe to it, too.
I'm going
to
work in Tron Legacy on every...
Like, she has this big mansion, and it's this company that she's now, like, heading up. I'm like, oh, this reminds me... She reminds me of Bruce Wayne, but, more Indiana Jones does than Batman does. Mm-hmm. But her character reminded me of Bruce Wayne a lot.
Because they could do so much with that going forward if they should make another.
Yeah, which I feel like they are.
It has to do with how well this one does. How much money it makes.
I'll check that as you continue talking.
But... Then again, it could be a thing that if they own the rights to make a Tomb Raider movie within X number of years, they may just make one not to lose the rights. So
That's you know, that's a good point.
So you never know.
It's made $274 million.
Do we know what the budget was?
So that's doesn't sound too bad. The budget was $94 million. So it's cleared over.
Join us next year when we review the sequel.
I think this is going to happen.
So I would like to see that, as opposed to working out of her father's little dungeon. She could have a whole Croft cave under the mansion by the next installment. So
yeah, it almost
she's
seems-
got. I mean, she signed the interesting thing, and of course, spoilers, is that she signed over power of attorney at the end. But so she may not be running the companies, but she should still have access to plenty of money,
plenty of resources.
Yeah, and I do want to see this get resolved with the story they've set up. And I actually kind of hope they don't resolve it in the next one. Like,
no, I
draw
think
it out.
You know, if this movie does that well, and the studio does actually consider it, and if you know we have something good later on, the interesting thing is that the end of the movie actually kind of implies that they're going to have a mm-hmm. sequel. Mm-hmm. And I would actually be interested in seeing that, because the lead-in, the tie-in into that is actually kind of explained and implied at the end of the movie as well, too. We see this whole corporation that's just dominating across the globe, and Lara is just finding this out that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she doesn't discover who the villain is until the final scene of the film,
end.
If you don't count the post-credits scene. But
we have somebody that is just... leading the whole organization, maybe even somebody higher than her.
Yeah,
it's.
So I'll make a correction. When I Googled it, it was the numbers from the 2001 film.
Uh-oh.
Unfortunately,
oh, no.
So
oh,
this
no.
film had a good Friday.
Okay.
And made like $10 million.
Okay.
Okay.
Which is considered good. It was the best film on Friday.
Okay.
But the weekend so far overall, Black Panther's still having a stronger performance. So it's still yet to be seen. Actually,
Black Panther's a juggernaut. So
yeah.
It's just going to be tough either
way. Yeah. Yeah.
And then that tying into just Black Panther, and then Infinity War just riding the wave.
But let's not forget that a lot of action and adventure films do really well overseas, too.
And it did, I believe Tomb Raider did very well in China. It made more money in China than it did in the United States.
Yeah.
So that's a really good sign.
Yeah. I think we could potentially see another.
I think so. As long as it's doing well in China, we're good, because the Chinese market is just going to keep expanding. So anything that does better in China than it does here, I think, has a good chance of continuing into a franchise.
Yeah. I am really, you know.
I'm down.
I'm down for
and
another.
I thought Alicia had a great performance as well.
She's
like
great.
I was very impressed with her. The amount of physical stunt, I don't know how much of that was her own stunt.
She was shredded.
But oh man, like the things she was doing with her body, I'm like, oh my gosh, like the amount of training that it would take to do that. Like
that and I've seen her in a number of things, but not as many things as I had seen Maleficent at the time.
Angelina Jolie.
I just went blank for a second.
Yeah.
At the time that came out. So when I watched the first one, it was you were just watching Angelina Jolie, whereas this time you felt like you were watching Lara Croft.
Yeah. Oh, I agree completely. And it helps that this is the first Alicia Vikander film that I've seen as well, because I would feel that way about Angelina Jolie.
I thought you'd seen Ex Machina.
She was in that.
She's a robot.
Oh, my gosh. That's
why she was so able to jump around this so much. She's actually a robot.
This is the second time in the show that Ex Machina has been brought up, and I didn't realize there was a connection between that and a film that we were reviewing.
That's right.
I need to just watch Ex Machina again, because apparently there's all these connections that I don't
remember.
There's
a couple guys from Star Wars in there, too, I think.
Hashtag it's all connected.
Really? Wait, no. I think I know that.
I was about to say that.
Yeah, that's cool. Any other final thoughts about this film before we move on?
Great film, great stunts.
I recommend watching it.
Yeah. I would take a friend to go watch it. I don't mind watching it again.
Yeah, bring a friend.
It's rewatchable.
So you can buy two tickets and it makes more money, so they'll make another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it. Go watch it multiple times. Matinees.
Let me see. What else can I think of? Because I remember watching it. I actually just watched it last night, too. Trying to think of what other scenes I wanted to discuss. Lou Ren's character, I mean, was he developed well enough?
Okay, here's the thing. So I like that the film was very kind of like feminist, and like she didn't really need him necessarily. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of off helping, but, you know, it was mainly about her. So I like that. And the fact that it was like that did, you know, you had less screen time for him and less stuff for him to do. And his story he was very much an ancillary character for her.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Like certain films... like kind of like big budget superhero films, for example, and like really ensemble cast films, I do really want to see good development from multiple characters, and I'm disappointed when it's really too focused on one. Like Black Panther, I thought could have used a little bit more development for some of the supporting cast. But for a film like this that is very much about Lara Croft, like I think I'll give it a pass for it being just about Lara Croft, because that's kind of what it is.
We wanted to bring Lauren into this, and I know she hasn't seen the film. But just based on just based on our conversation alone already and what we've mentioned about the film, is this something that you would be interested in? Would you see it as a really empowering film, especially from a female perspective? I mean, we want to get your insight into this.
Oh, yeah, it's
this.
On my list of long movies I need to name the song. Yeah, I loved Indiana Jones as a kid. I loved Rogue One. So hearing what you guys have to say about it, I'm really excited to see this film.
Yeah,
whether it be soon or in like.
Is there some, have you seen the have you seen some of the trailers or some of the promo material?
Like months ago, I'm gonna go home and rewatch them because I was like, "What are you guys talking about?" So but I'm excited to see the film when I finally can see it.
Okay,
so of course, yeah.
Was there anything that you saw? Anything that stuck out that probably got you like, "Hey, I need to see this as well too." Is it the character herself or is it just personal intrigue?
Both.
And just, again, the Indiana Jones Rogue One thing. Because, when I was watching it, I was realizing, oh, my gosh, this is pretty much the plot of Rogue One. It's just in the Indiana Jones type genre film.
I know. We have that whole entire umbrella of Indiana Jones just going into this. And, it's a fair – I would say, in my opinion, it's a fair comparison.
Oh, yeah.
Because we see a lot of,
It's the Rogue One of the Indiana Jones franchise, but it's not in the Indiana Jones franchise. But if it was...
The ending is a little different.
I kind of wish that Crystal Skull had been, a storyline like this.
Mm-hmm.
That would have, I think, been way better received. But then again, at that time, it would have been a little ahead of its time, and people have been like, what is this thing? This is a political film. I hate this. Now it's like, this is how all films should be, because we understand that. So that's great. So moving on to our next topic, we're going to talk about Jessica Jones season 2. We're all at kind of different points in the season. I've only seen the first episode.
Same.
So
a busy week with the movie
So I know Ron and Lauren, you've gone a lot further into the series, so I'll let you kind of lead the discussion a little bit and just discuss. I know it'll be difficult for you to just forget about the things that we haven't seen yet.
You can spoil it for me.
I need you to recap, Chris, what happened the first episode because I don't remember.
Basically, the first episode is just kind of a setup episode to see where Jessica Jones is now,
Post-Defenders.
Post-Defenders. Okay, yeah. She's basically drinking her sorrows away, and she's also kind of... working.
It's like every episode, drinking her.
She's working some gig jobs. I mean, very similar almost to how she is at the beginning of the first season in a lot of ways. And then what happens is she has her friend whose name's escaping me.
Trish,
who is trying to Trish is trying to get her to kind of research her past and what made her who she is. But she's kind of. Jessica's kind of hesitant to do this, and she fights it a little bit. But then she starts discovering things that make her, want to. For instance, there's this guy that's a client of hers or wants to be a client who's, the Flash.
The Flash.
Who can run fast, but he can only run fast when he's scared. Mm-hmm. And
The wizard. And then, sounds like a superhero that wants to, go to the bathroom a lot. Mm-hmm.
She doesn't believe him, but then something happens where she has to believe him.
Yeah, okay. Now it's jogging my memory.
Yeah.
And on top of this, then you have the other sort of PI.
Is that the I was going to say, then we have the competition.
Yes.
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 Yeah.
I'm totally mixed on the first few episodes of Jessica Jones. And the main reason why was just because I thought we were going to have some type of tie-in or at least some type of mention or fallout from what happened in The Defenders.
Mm.
I didn't see that at all. I thought maybe Jessica would have had some – this season of Jessica Jones would have alluded to the disaster that happened, how she knows the rest of these powered superheroes. But looking at it, it almost seems like, true to her character, Jessica Jones just wants to be left alone, just wants to be doing her own thing. And so she continues on with Alias Investigations. But again, I would have loved to see some type of fallout from what happened with The Defenders.
I felt like there was a little bit in that she's got to adjust to people knowing about her now.
That's true.
And that kind of ended with them being in the public eye. And now, that first client that tried to get her to kill the pizza boy, she knew who she was. She knew she wasn't just hiring a PI. She knew she was calling her a super. So there's that piece. But then it also feels like this is more of a continuation of the first season of Jessica Jones, not as much the continuation of Defenders. It's happened, but...
Well, they make a lot of references to powered people.
Yeah,
too, as
yeah.
the season goes along, which I won't.
Yeah,
say anything,
no.
No, it's fine.
You can mention that. Yeah, that's a fair mention because we actually see that more opening going in later in this, during the progression of the season, she actually acknowledges that she has these superpowers. And because they're more the defenders, I guess, are more in the limelight, that people are now mentioning, oh, you're a powered, superpowered person, or you're one of those people as well, too. So they're now exposed. They're out in the open. So it's not something that they were trying to keep secret. But I do find it interesting that we have this side story of Jessica having this competition from somebody just across her way in her own building, that they're having their own private investigative service, and Jessica is like trying to get her clients, and it's basically a competition between clients. Now, does it kind of make sense to the story? I don't know. I'm still mixed on that.
Well, didn't he offer to buy her out at first, the company? Yeah. Wasn't that mm-hmm. what he was trying to do? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, yeah. It, you know, Alias Investigations compared to this guy who's working in, like, a more rich, I would say.
He had a lot more money. Yeah,
yeah, a lot more profitable type business with higher-end clients and stuff that want to do their own investigative survey. So I thought that was just a contrast, whether or not it was needed. Again, I don't know if anybody caught that. What thoughts on that? Or
yeah, I haven't gone far enough to the show to have an opinion on that. But I will.
I mean, there's something else going on there, though, in that it wasn't just he wanted to buy it. It's that Trinity, Carrie-Anne Moss wanted him, like working Carrie-Anne through Moss. Him because Jessica Jones wouldn't work with her. So that's going to tie in. Maybe it already has, as far as you've gotten, but that's going to tie in later. Like, there's something going on with the three of them that will become important to the season, or they wouldn't have bothered with it in the first episode.
What I do like about this season, though, is that literally, you know, with all the promo material and all the news outlets that's been reporting on Jessica Jones and the interviews that Kristen Ritter has had about this season, is that literally in their words and in her own words, is that they're literally peeling back the layers of Jessica. Mm. And we're really getting into the core of Jessica Jones and her character, how she was made, because, spoiler alert, she was engineered in some type of laboratory. And there's deep connections there, which you'll see in the later episodes about the impact of who else was created there, without spoiling.
Yeah.
And how she relates to that person. For anybody who's already watched the series, you already know what's going on, and we'd love some feedback about that.
And we'll be talking about this again on the show when people have had a chance to watch more. Like, when our audience has had a chance to watch more, it's only been out for a week, and when me and Patrick have, and I think by the time we're all finished with the series, we're going to revisit this and talk about it more in depth in maybe a week or two.
Yeah, so we'll get more information as the season progresses, because... Yeah. To me, I finished watching Jessica Jones, and I actually had a discussion with this with another friend of mine, and it was kind of weary and it was kind of odd in the first few episodes. We agreed that it was just odd.
It wasn't as fast for me, because I watched the first two, and like for me, I didn't really get into it at the same kind of level that I did the first season. Like the first season, I loved. It's like probably my. It's right up there with Daredevil for my like favorite, you know, Netflix Marvel shows. And so I thought it was amazing. Whereas this is like, all right, I'm going to watch a few episodes, and then I kind of like, you know, I didn't need to – I wasn't hooked. I didn't have to put everything off and keep watching until the end. You know, I hadn't gotten to that point yet.
Yeah. It does – I will guarantee you this. If you're into watching the series and if you like what's going on, if you're intrigued, definitely keep going on your watch on it or binge.
What episode would you say is the episode where it like really picks up and gets into like the swing of things?
I would believe about halfway, about episode six.
Okay.
Six, seven.
So you got to get through
five
it a little
or
bit.
Six.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we really start to see things tie together.
Yeah.
And I'm actually happy to see some of the other characters on that show have some huge, huge development on it.
Like that's great.
Carrie-Anne Moss goes on a. The character has grown. Even Malcolm, her neighbor that she that she hires as her associate PI, has a huge development. Trish,
yeah.
Rachel
sure.
Taylor, Trish. For anybody who's seen the show, Trish's character has developed a lot.
Malcolm, say Trish again.
Trish. It's Patsy.
Someone thought my name was Trish like last night. I introduced myself. I'm like, hi, I'm Chris, and they're like, Trish.
Somebody's been watching too much Jessica
Jones. Yeah, somebody is like, either that or Kilgrave is still around trying to brainwash people. For those of you who have seen this episode and for those that have already paid attention to the material out there, yes, David Tennant does make his return.
Spoiler. I had a feeling. It's okay.
I wanted it. So amazing, I'm glad. I would have been disappointed if he hadn't come back.
It's an amazing comeback.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So we'll talk more about this show in a later episode of Geek Radio when more people have had a chance to see the whole thing and we can get into like full spoilers about the whole thing. But in the meantime, you have a little bit to catch up on it, and I have a little bit to catch up on it.
A lot to catch up.
A lot.
I do.
A lot, yes. We have a few more topics on the table. I really want to talk about this. I know we all really want to talk about this, so let's get right into it. There's a new trailer out for Infinity War.
Oh, yes!
Man, and this
has
to be one of the best ones, I feel like, for the film. It's a great trailer.
I'm not going to lie. I was at, after seeing it on the morning, what was it, Friday? Because, yeah, Friday is when it came out. Yesterday. Wow, that was
hasn't been out that long, yeah.
Yeah, just yesterday.
Yeah.
Woke up, they released it 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Six
our time.
Yeah,
obviously. So I woke up about 20 minutes later, and then all of a sudden, the Russos, if you've been following social media, the Russos have been teasing, and even the Marvel accounts have been teasing about a new Infinity War trailer. And after that, I literally was at the car dealership getting my car repaired and worked on, and I had to watch that trailer at least 10 more times to kind of pick at the screen. And I was one of the first things I saw after my, I think, second watch was the Black Order. We have Proxima Midnight, Cull Obsidian, a beautiful, beautiful, haunting, scary shot of Ebony Maw in that trailer. I mean, there's just so much going on in this trailer. This is to pick on. And I've waited, you know, this is 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
As a big fan of the MCU, this is...
You have Star-Lord going toe-to-toe with Tony Stark.
You know? The funny comments between them. And just like, you know, I joked around that, you know, he mentioned, I have a plan. If my plan is infinite, it's better than yours. And I'm just thinking in my head, yeah, sure, you have only 12% of a plan.
I'm just so curious in this film, like, how they're going to manage so many big egos being in the same space.
All the
like,
sass.
Oh my gosh. I mean, The Avengers was... enough, like those films, enough. But now that you have, you know, all these other characters from all these other newer films coming in, like,
oh, I would have loved to be in the room with all the directors, James Gunn, the Russos, even the Whedon crew on that, just Coogler as well too. Just be in the room and see what their minds are like, just putting this film together. And having all the characters relate. I mean, we see, compared to the first trailer that was released, we saw a lighter side of the Avengers, right? So, and we just see that introduction of Thanos, that he brings out some destruction. But it was not until this trailer that we see a huge contrast into that, where it's predominantly Thanos. Mm-hmm. And you see all the Avengers just being decimated left and right from, you know, his involvement with all this.
Yeah.
Any theories, guys? Any theories?
Well, here, see, that's what I was going to bring up is, based on the trailers that we've seen so far, do we think that they're going to kill off any of these characters?
Yes.
That's a definite yes. That's a definite yes.
Any predictions for who?
Captain America and Loki.
Oh,
I was going to say Loki. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Loki.
And Cap.
Loki's going to be out in the first 10 minutes. You heard it here first.
Dang.
That's my prediction. I think what we saw at the end of Thor... when Thanos realizes that Loki's got the Tesseract, he's done.
Yeah.
He's done right then. Because you notice we don't really see him in any of the trailers beyond, you know, not a whole lot.
Right.
You don't see him on the planet.
You're right.
We didn't see in the trailer was Hawkeye. I was like,
yeah, that's a thing, really, right? Like, everybody's been talking about how they're having a hard time, like, he might not be in this film.
Does that mean he's
safe
then?
Okay, on the Marvel page and the Russos have said that Clint is on his own journey. And I'm actually disappointed that they don't feature Hawkeye, Clint Barton, as a prominent character. Now, a lot of people, a lot of fans are like, he's just a useless Avenger. He just got bows and arrows with no superpower. But
I love the arc with him and Black Widow, though.
Like, oh, their history.
Their history together and how history. Those two characters relate to each other. Well, that's my favorite.
And I think after what they showed us in Avengers 2 with his family, that they may let him live through this film, and he's with his family at that point, and have someone that they can bring back for the next one, because this, I don't think, is going to end on a happy note. So, you know, there's going to be something they need to come back for the next Avengers, and when they're building the new team, that might be the way that he carries over, because maybe it's not very realistic for a non-powered character to live through this.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the way they gave him an out.
I hope that they kind of at least my hope with him is that they kind of bring him in as a surprise character like they did in Age of Ultron.
Oh, that'd be great.
As well, too. Just something to the rescue. And obviously, with Hawkeye, we haven't even seen any Ant-Man, too.
That's another one.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And, of course, you have the Ant-Man sequel film coming out right after.
In July.
But we've seen photos of Ant-Man on the set for the next Avengers.
True.
So we do know that they're probably saving him in some way.
That makes sense.
So,
and that makes sense, because they obviously, I think they're going to want that sequel film, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and to kind of revitalize interest in him before they have him appear in another Avengers film. Because it's been a while since that first film.
I wonder, okay, so just a little thought about into this. There was that whole scene in Ant-Man where he was talking about both Hank Pym and Scott Lang are talking about him going subatomic and that all reality, all time doesn't exist. I wonder if Ant-Man, despite how small he is, will have a bigger, more prominent role, because if we're dealing with the Infinity Stones and knowing that there's a reality and time stone and space, and we're still waiting for the presence of the Soul Stone, if he's actually going to play some part into it and he's able to alter some type of reality or something like that, breaking into from subatomic.
That
I think that would be an awesome thing, because you have Ant-Man, who is sort of a lesser Avenger.
Well, and if you think about it, in the MCU, he's not even on the team.
Right.
They brought him in for Civil War, but he wasn't on the new team.
He was recruited by Cap via Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And that could be why you don't see Hawkeye, because they're all in hiding at this point. Cap comes out of hiding for this, but that doesn't mean everybody else will.
Right. I wish we could show this on our live feed about this fan poster that was made.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Shout out to this great parody artist, as well as a great artist overall, Boss Logic Online, who just put Clinton Barton all over for each and every character on the Avengers Infinity War poster, which was great. And even somebody else had put the original somebody had theorized that it was the original poster, plus it's actually a fold-out.
Oh, my
the
God.
Bottom half was just enormously a huge part of Clint Barton. And I love this. I love this with the fans who are just really getting into it, and with all the excitement.
Yeah.
That scene with Gamora. Young Gamora, like more background into her. That'll be interesting to see as well, too.
It's good, and it's also great, too, coming off of the humongous success of Black Panther. This trailer had focused a lot on the characters that are coming from Wakanda as well, and that's fantastic, because this, in a way, will feel kind of like
Black Panther 2.
Black Panther 2.
Right.
Just like, you know, the Captain America and Avengers storylines have interwoven very, very, very closely. And so that's great. And by the way, that's awesome that Black Panther did so well.
A billion.
That's amazing.
Over a billion. The first Marvel movie to
There's
over
so
a
much. There's so much buzz about it. I honestly feel like maybe other than maybe just that first Avengers film in 2012, and maybe even more than that, like there's more cultural buzz around Black Panther than maybe any other Marvel movie. Like people are still constantly talking about it, constantly referencing it. Like just when I'm going to like various things in kind of in the industry, like there people are still talking about it, making jokes about it, you know, weeks later.
Yeah.
Like it's a huge cultural phenomenon, and that's fantastic, because we need more movies like that.
Well, that, and also it's just good for the MCU in general. And that people have been talking about when is the superhero fatigue going to hit and these movies are going to start to drop off. And I think that what we're seeing here is the fact that this movie did so well and he's featured so prominently in the next is it will bring a new new groups of people who haven't been into the MCU, and they're not fatigued.
Definitely.
They're not sick of this. So that for those of us that are loving it, this will keep it going for quite some time.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest arc for everybody in the new Avengers or the next phase of the MCU will be Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel will definitely be that anchor character who will carry on the new MCU along with Black Panther. You know, Black Panther had already set the tone for what's to come in terms of and how it affects today's culture. Even radio nowadays is mentioning, they're even saying a cultural phenomenon in their reviews, and that's definitely it. That's definitely the reflection of the times, reflection of the type of characters that we need.
Yes,
more diversity and all that. So,
Afrofuturism,
yeah,
like fantastic. It's not something we've seen a lot of, but the world needs it for sure.
Did you guys already buy tickets?
I haven't bought mine yet, but.
I think.
With the exception of Star Wars, I never bought my tickets early.
Yeah.
A movie that big will have so many showings that I'll be able to just walk up maybe an hour before and
take
my pick.
I'm
not that worried.
and you know, it's still going to be on for a while, especially you know, if you want to view it in IMAX or Dolby Cinema. For me, I'm going all out on this.
Nice.
And I'm joining that special
event
by Nerdist.
Awesome.
I bought my ticket for
That's awesome.
With a group friends of mine. So strangely enough, AMC was putting out 31 hours, but the one that's being shown, the marathon that's going on at the El Capitan, is only 11 movies.
Okay.
So it's 20 something hours.
What are they leaving
out? I don't know. I don't think they've listed the films yet.
Got it.
For the
Thor
marathon.
2,
maybe.
probably Hulk.
Iron Man 3.
I bet you they leave out Hulk. I think they'll probably include things that are really
relevant.
Tied to leading up to this story, and Hulk's not going to have a whole lot of time.
That makes sense.
Thor 2 is another good point.
Obviously the first Captain America, because the Tesseract's in there.
That needs to be there. I think Doctor Strange probably
Age
will be
Ultron.
In there. Yeah.
Yeah,
it might leave
Doctor
out
Strange.
Ant-Man, potentially.
Maybe.
It's possible.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have a list.
Yeah, they probably did go through and look at anything that's affiliated with an Infinity Stone. It's going to have to be in this.
Yeah.
But the rest could be left out.
Didn't the Dark World have an Infinity Stone?
You're right.
Oh,
no,
so
it did.
They
it
are
did.
Gonna have
it's going to have to have Thor 2.
Yeah.
But maybe Iron Man 3, maybe even Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you have to have Iron Man because that's where
Iron
this
Man
all starts.
That's
But then I bet you they skip Hulk.
Yeah. Iron Man will probably be the first one.
It's probably going to be the origin story. So you're going to have Iron Man, Cap, and Thor, and then straight to Avengers.
Yeah.
And then from there, anywhere where there's a mention of a stone.
Yeah.
So Guardians as well, it will have to be in there.
Oh, yeah. The very first. Yeah. Guardians Volume 1. Because I don't think Volume 2 didn't really.
I bet you they may include Guardians 2 just because.
It's newer, maybe.
It advances their story along before they show up. So
new
you know Spider-Man, where they're at.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
They might even show Spider-Man Homecoming just because it's Spider-Man. I mean, it's a popular character.
Yeah,
because
that was another great part of the trailer when Peter shows up and talks about Dr. Strange. we're using our code names. Okay.
Oh, by the way, I'm Spider-Man.
That was great.
That was a great
going
line.
Back to what you said about juggling all the egos, I kind of wonder if they're even going to bring Guardians to Earth before the third act. So I think
that first teaser trailer, again, the way that they put them in towards the end of the trailer, almost as like a post-trailer, like makes you think that because they weren't.
Well, that first trailer made me think that they weren't even going to get to Earth in the first film.
Right.
And they might just be teased throughout to say like they're going to come in and save the day in the second one. This clearly shows a lot more that we're going to see them fighting alongside everyone else.
Yeah.
But it also does make it look like this is third act stuff or at least mid movie on, which I don't think a whole lot will happen in space. They're going to I think Loki's dead, Thor gets thrown out of the ship and Hulk as well cuz Hulk smashes into the house.
Yeah.
So they find Thor and then that's probably where we're going to get all of the backstory on who Thanos is from Gamora.
Mm.
She's going to, you know, Thor's going to be like, who's this guy? She's going to tell him the story while all this stuff is happening on Earth and they're going to be journeying there, and I think that we won't get them all together till probably the heroes get beaten in the second act.
Yeah.
And then I think you're going to see all these little sects. You're going to have Wakanda, you're going to have the Guardians in space, you're going to have Tony's people, and it won't be till they come together that they're able to defeat him, but I think we're definitely going to see some losses.
Yeah, they're all ruined. Oh, that was a good reference, you know, for anybody who's read the Infinity Gauntlet, you know, there's the opening scene. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, I'm sorry, before I go on that, is I found it very interesting that the very opening voiceover in that trailer by Gamora sounded very eerily similar to Nick Fury and his whole thing about uniting the Avengers.
Interesting.
I saw that tone. Plus, mm-hmm. also, I noticed this, that the beginning shot of the city of, I think, New York is upside down mm-hmm. and twisted as if something evil is going to happen. That yeah. same shot was very similar to how Killmonger in Black Panther also started the scene
You're
upside
right.
down.
I remember that, yeah.
And said that as well, too. So I thought yeah. there was a nice little...
It is.
I don't know if that was intentional, but I just thought Could it was be. Just an interesting
yeah, it's very
kind of
similar.
Way of looking at the films.
Yeah, so. No, it was very well shot and well edited. Fantastic, fantastic trailer. And super, super stoked for that film. So moving on to our final topic.
I just have a question for you before we move on. We were guessing about if anyone's going to exit this film, if there's going to be deaths.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What about anyone coming back? Do you guys predict Red Skull coming back or no?
Coulson.
I asked
specifically about Red Skull.
I want Coulson to come back.
I wish they'd have like a post-credits at least with him, but I don't think they will.
They've been hinting that he will reunite with the Avengers, but they don't want to say how yet. So I'm thinking the next Avengers movie.
And at the very end or something. Yeah.
That's our segue into
the next topic.
Here we go. Shield. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so me and Lauren here are the experts, so to speak, on Agents of Shield right now. And yeah, going on that topic about what we were discussing about Coulson, Jeff Loeb, the head of Marvel TV, stated that, and even Clark Gregg said that, Coulson might reveal his existence in a very unique way, either on the television show or you might even be able to see it on screen. I don't know how that's going to work out. But this past episode, Lauren, share with your thoughts on last night's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I loved it. I mean, I just loved all the humor in it. I mean, it's a Marvel thing, but
I thought after, okay, this was kind of interesting that this was episode 101, so it's kind of like Marvel, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. 101, the 101st episode, but the 13th episode of this season. We are totally seeing some different arcs. We are still leaving off from the 100th episode where the agents have now just come back and are trying to close this rift, and Fitz was able to kind of close off that rift a little bit, because it's part of this rift is causing like a fear dimension and having past characters come back. And one of the characters that we do see back, interestingly enough, is not part of that fear dimension, but is in the current times where the agents are alive right now, is Alex von Strucker.
Oh, yeah.
Who is the son of Baron
yes.
von Strucker, who was one of the leaders of Hydra as well, too. So that has a totally different arc and story building with General Hale. General Hale, if you don't know, is the character that's playing the mother of Ruby. And Ruby right now has a totally interesting character. I don't know, what do you Ruby being played by Dove Cameron, who is from, I believe, The Descendants. Correct me if I'm wrong. For anybody who's listening,
I'll look up while you continue to talk.
Yeah, I think she was from The Descendants. If I'm not mistaken, keep it within the Disney family.
I was gonna say the band or the Disney show.
The show, and I think she has some agenda going on. I don't know, but her relationship.
Well, we still don't know what Hale's agenda is.
That's
we
exactly
don't know what
right.
She's up to. Yeah.
Well, the agents are suspecting that, you know, she has more gravitonium in her possession. And the team is trying to find a way to seal that rift into finding out, okay, we can close the sphere dimension and the rift if we use more gravitonium. And this is almost tying everything into from season one, even Agent Carter, when gravitonium was kind of first discovered.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. Right. Season two, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the different types of dimensions that can be played around. This is, again, mentioning time, and, you know, we're still bringing in some themes about time and space and time and time continuum issues. Space-time continuum. That's what
there
I'm trying to say.
And she was.
Okay, Descendants. Yeah. I was right. Okay. That was in relation to
Duff Cameron. She played Mal in those.
There we go.
Yeah.
She played Mal. So She plays a dangerous character. She plays a relatively dangerous character. I mean, she chopped off
Yo-Yo's arms.
That was sad. That was a very ominous prediction.
Going off of that, though, I actually really enjoyed the scene between Coulson and Yo-Yo when they're talking.
Yes.
About the prosthetics, yeah.
Yes. Even you know, what I loved about this is that Yo-Yo's character hasn't changed.
I know.
A bit. Like, okay, she gets her arm chopped off, yet she still has some sass. And it's funny that we have the Fitzsimmons relationship, who are obviously married now.
And spoiler they call alert.
They're married now. For all the Fitzsimmons shippers are like, woo! And, you know, this has been building
so
up for a long time.
So is it Mr. and Mrs. Fitzsimmons?
But they call each other. That's funny. They call each other a husband, and then Ian calls Elizabeth Henstridge wife, you know,
say, like,
in
Simmons
the episode,
Fitz
wifey.
Yeah,
and it was funny that they even had, I guess, a nod to the fans and the ship relationship between both of them by kind of reversing the hashtag Fitzsimmons ship into saying Simmons Fitz. So that was kind of just a funny nod, and this is what the show is all about. It's like kind of a nod, basically, to all the fans. Deke, finally. Oh, what I was gonna say is that, I'm sorry, backtracking on what I was gonna say about Mac and Yo-Yo's relationship. I feel like they're the married couple on this show. The way that they interact is almost as if they were married, but they're not. They're not married.
They act that way, though.
But they act like they're a couple, and they kind of tease each other jokingly back and forth with, you know, Yo-Yo obviously with the loss of her hands, you know, and Mac saying some type of smart aleck comment. You know, she says to him, you know, if I had hands, I would strangle you right now. Like, that would be something said in a committed relationship, or at least some type of intimate relationship, so to speak. So it was interesting to see that. But I think one of the funniest scenes was Coulson being Coulson. Excuse me. There's this friend of Mac who appears in this episode, and he refers to Mac, played by the very humble, very just really cool guy, Henry Simmons, who refers to Mac as Mac Hammer, and his friend is referred to as Candyman. Now, it seems kind of odd, like, okay, there's this odd character who just comes in and, you know, refers to each other that way. Obviously, we know then that means that they've had some history together. But later on in that episode, they're on this ship. The agents, who was it? It was Mac.
Which ship? The flying ship?
The flying ship that nobody apparently sees. I have to talk about
that.
I have to mention that. That floating boat.
Oh, the floating boat.
The floating boat, which has a source of gravitonium in there, which I think General Hale has some ties to General Hale because they were trying to hide the gravitonium in there. And Mac has a suitcase where he tries to, you know, close up the capture the gravitonium. Yeah. And then Coulson says, "You can't touch this." Like, it was a joke about him being called Mac Hammer. Which is a nod to MC Hammer. You know, you can't touch this. And then Coulson just says, "Sorry, I couldn't resist." Which is a classic Coulson line. I mean, that's just something, even with the response of fans and Mac himself is like, "We've got no time for this, Phil." Like, that was just a classic line. So I think that was just actually pretty cool on the writers to, you know, just have Coulson be natural. Here he is. Dying, you know, on his way to death. All the rest of the agents know about this already. He is about to die, and he still has his humor intact.
Nothing
and he
changes.
Mentioned that, yeah, he does, and he acknowledges that, yeah, I might be dying, but you know, I'm still here, you know, and that's just strictly Coulson being Coulson. He still wants to be the leader of the team. He still has to make sure that he's in some type of role in leadership to not let that little aspect of him come to some type of.
And going
failure.
Back on that, speaking of him dying again, didn't that happen in the Avengers too when he was stabbed?
Yeah.
Hey, Loki. Yeah, he made a Woody
Cutler. That was, you know, Nick Fury's experiment that got him healed with, you know, with Kree blood. And that deal with Ghost Rider that we saw actually finalized in the 100th episode when he became Ghost Rider, that actually burned off of off from him. And he's just kept it a secret for a long time that, yes, he's dying. So it was interesting to see that. But overall in the episode, what I am interested in seeing is, like, what is Ruby's agenda? Because she's all of a sudden trying to seduce Alex von Strucker to kind of side with her, because she has a very almost rivalry relationship with her mother, General Hale. So going forth on that, I think we'll see probably how that plays out, how maybe there's some ties to Hydra again. We don't know. I mean, what else do you see coming out of any of the story arcs from this past episode?
I don't know. I was telling you earlier, I see her as a victim because of the relationship with her mother kind of being used. I don't know. Maybe they're going to try to escape. Maybe she's trying to get friends to help her get out of where she is. I don't really know. It'll be interesting to see what's going on with that mm-hmm. story arc there with Hale and Ruby.
Yeah, what else do you see about that relationship? Because that is an interesting relationship, too, between Ruby and her mom. Like, what else? You mentioned that she's abused. Do you think that's going to even just push her even more to just push back against her mother? Or do you think they're possibly going to have some type of common ground where they're going to rekindle in that relationship between mother and daughter?
It's hard to tell right now what's going on. Like, they each have their own agenda, almost, and whether or not it's going to, like, tie in together or whether something's going to explode and they're going to branch off. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought, going back to the floating ship, I was live tweeting last night on the episode, and one of the discussions was, okay, there's a floating boat in the sky. How could not any... This is probably the only qualm I probably have about the episode. How could any ship, or I mean any plane, jetliner, any military jet come up on those scanners not be able to detect that ship or see it on a flyby?
They've shown cloaking technology in Avengers stuff before. I don't remember if it was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or if it was in the films, but weren't the Triskelions able to cloak,
yeah.
I think?
Not the Triskelion, but the Helicarrier.
Yeah, Helicarrier, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, they were able to cloak, but this particular ship, which obviously has some possible Hydra background, was just out there in the open. And it was just so weird for me to see, like, how you're trying to put some realism behind it, and you just see a floating ship.
Like the Flying Dutchman or something. Oh, it just looked like some ghost ship in the air. Yeah. It was so weird.
Yeah, it was literally like a ghost ship. And
Phil drove a flying car in the first episode. You can't look for realism.
That's cool. That's cool. That one I can believe. That's S.H.I.E.L.D. tech for you.
What are they saying in the episode, too? It's like, we've seen all this before. Like, this should shock me, but it does. Or somebody said that. I can't remember who said that.
Yeah, there was something about that. I just consider that Phil's land speeder. So with all the Star Wars references that... You know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has brought us. I just found it funny that would be, if Phil was a Jedi, that would be his version of a land speeder, and which is an interesting sight to see in the very first pilot episode, or I think second episode rather. But yeah, I was really intrigued by this episode. I really want to see how far it gets. How far are the agents willing to go to gather some more gravitonium? The relationship furthering between Deke, and he now understands that that Fitz and Simmons are his grandparents, which he at the end of the show, Fitz is like, aren't you gonna come along with me to Deke? And there's like, Deke is like, okay, sure, Gramps. Like, I thought that was a funny line. So there's acknowledgement now that Deke has acknowledged that, oh my gosh, I have this connection with y'all, and this is going to be a weird relationship. But we're going to see down the road how Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to progress from here on out, the story arcs, mm-hmm. Ruby, General Hale, and their search for gravitonium. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Super, super intriguing.
I need to get caught up.
I know.
After I finished Jessica Jones.
You guys are making me want to get caught up, but it's going to – I have like 100 episodes
know,
to get
right?
caught up.
I left off at the end of last season, which I liked what they were doing last year with the framework. Because it reminded me of this movie from the 80s really where people got sucked into a computer simulation called Tron.
Oh, no. Right when we thought we were safe.
And with that, we are about running out of time tonight for this episode of Geek Radio. Keep watching the stream. A podcast about anime is coming up next, and we want to remind everyone that next week we're going to be having a special episode of Geek Radio, as well as the Hall of Feed and podcast about anime. We're all doing it all together at WonderCon, yes, which is in Anaheim.
For those of you also still tuned in, weather permitting and no obstructions getting in the way.
We'll do it from inside a car if we have to.
Yeah, pretty
we're
much.
We're going to make it happen.
In regards to this upcoming Monday, I'll probably be doing some live streaming on our Instagram account at KPFK Geek Radio. I can't even say our name. And just give you guys some updates on Star Wars Land, a.k.a. Galaxy's Edge.
Awesome.
As well as some of the progress towards Pixar Pier. Maybe some food pictures around as well, too. So stay tuned on KPFK Geek Radio on our Instagram account, live or Facebook. I'll announce that later on. But yeah, stay tuned for WonderCon as we go live there next week.
For sure. And plugging our social media quick, I'm on Twitter at Seek3PO.
Twitter and Instagram at Patrick on the mic.
Twitter and Instagram at ThatOneNerdRon.
And I'm Freedom Not Fate.
And this awesome beat is Josiah Kavanaugh's. Make sure you check out his AP. Just search Artificial Paradise. That's Artificial Paradise. And you can find his EP. It's really awesome. And we also want to give special thanks to Claire, who is managing everything in the booth. So we're out of here.
Give it up, Claire.
Stay tuned for Podcast About Anime the Podcast. Until then, keep on geeking on.